Okay, we have a very special guest. It is really an honor to now introduce my husband. He has been an amazing and important part of my life. When I came to this country, he helped me out following that dream, that American dream that I wanted. I wanted to make it on my own. I wanted to have my own business. I wanted to be able to go back to Colombia every time I wanted, and I do. It's an only five-hour flight directly, Washington, D.C. to Bogota, and I can go there every time I want. If something happens back home, I go there. If a family member is sick, I go. If I want to see my parents, if there's a wedding, of course I'm there. Because of real estate, I can do this. Because of real estate, I have the life that I always dreamt. Because of real estate, I take care of my son. Every single morning, he wakes me up. We play in the mornings, I take care of him, I feed him, and then I can keep up on my business. So this is what real estate can do for you. And Tom is going to explain you in a very nice, simple, and very logical way how you can follow your dream too. So it is my great pleasure to introduce to you Tom Zeeb.
This is one of the most mind-blowing seminars I've been to. The content is just amazing.
It's an answer to a prayer to find some form of real estate where I can make lots of money and not have to worry about tenants.
If you want to learn, if you want to know about real estate, this is the place to be.
Awesome job, Tom. You put on here today. It can't be any better than this. What a knockout. Awesome day, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doc.
I tell you, I love Half the Area Rio. We get some wonderful education and ticket system, and I have just had a, this has just been a great day. Just a great day. Thanks so much for inviting us, Tom. Really, this has been great.
Thank you. The thing that's really opened my eyes about this program is that it's going to open up more opportunities for me that I couldn't otherwise fund. And also, it's going to give me an opportunity to help family and friends in the upcoming economy that we're having. So thank you. And
Tom Zeeb sponsored, and I have to say that it was inspiring, first of all, but more importantly, informational.
And I'm just so excited to be here. Tom and Carolina, everyone is having a great time. We just love our rare president, and we're just so excited.
One of the real estate industry's top pros, talking about a very important and yet necessary service of being able to provide cash for your deals. God bless Tom Zeeb and Carolina. They put on a great show and do a lot of hard work for you guys. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Kerry Orr. I'm an attorney here in D.C. Came to the Capital Career Seminar, and it blew my mind. Like, some of the things that he was talking about is stuff I work on every day, and I didn't realize could be applied to real estate. So, I don't want to say anything to my professors, but I figured it out now. So, yeah, come on down. You'll learn something. I know I did. Thanks.
Bill Bauer here, and if you can't tell, it's a formal evening event. I'm here with Tom Zeeb and a friend, someone you can trust. You know, that's a hard thing, trust. How do you build trust? When Tom gives me his word repeatedly and never lets me down, and gives you his word and will never let you down, you've got someone in your life that's going to make a difference.
A world of noise. All right. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for coming. I want to talk about tonight. I've had a couple things on my mind. And it's funny. You try to come up with what topics to cover and what are people interested in. And, you know, we have our ear to the ground a lot. We listen to the feedback we get from people. And I think about the different struggles my coaching students have gone through with deals and what are we looking at, and a couple of themes just the last few months have continually surfaced, and mainly control. Everyone started to really appreciate how much controlling the deal and the different aspects of the deals is such a major part of everything that you do. And if you lose that control or don't have respect for where that control is, your deal can go down the tubes. And if you spend a lot of time working to get a deal, and you've spent some money marketing, and you've had this patience, and you've got your hopes and your emotions and everything, and you know, maybe quitting your job, riding on it, or supporting your family, riding on getting those deals done, or finally proving that you can do the business. If it's control, and controlling the deals and the different things that happen along the way, control during each of the bridges that you need to cross, that is going to become, that is a major key component of getting those deals done. So when that came to mind, I said, I know what we're going to do. We're going to talk about control. A couple different ideas. And last night I said, you know what it is really comes down is control points. There are different points. They're like bridges you need to cross in terms of maintaining that control. So for the control freaks amongst us, maybe that would come natural. And the control freak somewhat has a bad connotation. No one wants to be a control freak. But what I'm basically going to tell you is you got to be, to a degree, be a little bit of a control freak. It's a good thing because it protects your deals and protects your profit. And that's exactly what we're all after. So that's been a lot on our mind. Now, so do I have any regrets about choosing that topic? No. My only partial regret is maybe doing this in the last 2 weeks of April was a mistake because I had to double up on the Allegra and wash my eyes with baby shampoo because, man, those allergies are something else this time of year. Those last 2 weeks of April, first week of May just killed me the last couple of years. But little tips like that, though, can work wonders. I had an ear, nose, and throat doctor tell me, wash your eyes with baby shampoo. I washed my eyes with baby shampoo today, and I can see again. So it's a good thing. So little tips like that, you're going to pick up a lot of things tonight, specifically focused on real estate, but that's one of those interesting things to think about. So tonight, it's control points. And make sure you have your pen and paper ready. If you don't have pen and paper, we have a pile of them in the back. Caroline will happily take care of you, because it is going to be very content heavy. If you know me, how many people have seen me speak before? Not just at the beginning of the meeting, but like a full presentation. All right, good, a few of you. It's content heavy. I give out a ton of content. So notepads are coming around and pens as well if you need them. Control points, 7 steps to ensure absolute deal control or you're going to lose your deal disastrously. And this applies not just for wholesalers. It's rehabbers, it's landlords, it's any real estate investor. If anything, if you're specifically a wholesaler, it's kind of double trouble because you have more control. You have more parties to control. At least if you're going to buy it and rehab it or buy it and be a landlord, you know, you're the one party and you're controlling what comes at you on that end. On a wholesaler, you're actually kind of, you're wedged in the middle. You're the meat in the middle of the sandwich. You got to control both sides of what's happening. So no matter what kind of investor you are, this presentation is specifically for you and it's important. I would also argue for, you know, kind of generally most business, if you think about it, to a degree, is getting to that level of control. So think about that and have it work. Why should you listen to me? Well, we're going to get into a few things. Am I anything particularly special? No, that's what's interesting. I'm going to show you that too. But I've been featured. CNBC, Washington Post Express, Kiplinger's, Retail Crossing, The Examiner, this week at National Realty, National Lifeline Radio. People want to hear what I have to say about it. So try to have strong opinions. And you have strong opinions about it, people go, you're kind of polarizing. It's one way or the other. And people go, that's interesting. So agree or disagree, but I'm going to tell you from experience what I think works. It's proven. We have examples in this room. You've met some of the students here tonight. You heard some things during success stories. You heard about, Steve, you bought a deal from Michael Fitzgerald, one of my graduates from quite a few years ago now. And he's just going ragingly mad. This stuff works. And so that's what we're after, is tying it all together. What else? National REIA board member. I talked about our day on the Hill last week. A lot of that is in conjunction with National REIA. What happened was we've had a lot of good success stories out of this REIA. And this REIA has been a good success story. And that gets noticed amongst the other REIAs when we go to the national conventions. And I got voted onto the board. So for better or worse, the board member of National REIA will make sure that we try to put a standard to REIAs across the country, because there are people in different markets that are sitting in rooms just like you at their local REIA wanting, thirsty for more knowledge on how to succeed as an entrepreneur and how to make a killing in real estate to live the life of their dreams. That's basically what we're all here for, right? And that's happening in many rooms and many different REIA groups across the country, and that's what we do in National REIA then, is support those groups and make it happen. I have a book coming out as well. At the moment, we're tentatively titling it the Instant Entrepreneurial Mindset. It's a book on mindset. What does it take mentally to play this game? It'll be available in August, so very much looking forward to that. It's been kind of fun to write and put all that together. So am I a particular genius? I hinted at this before. Is there a reason why I'm standing up here telling you, oh, control your deals and get your deals done like this? Was I born an excellent real estate investor? No. Did I think necessarily I'd ever be in real estate? No. Do I have a degree in real estate? No. No, I have a degree in history, political science. How much good has that done me, particularly? I think about that a little bit. I think about that. My cousin's graduating from American University next month. They are charging, is it $45,000 or $46,000 a year for that education? He is studying history and political science. Now, gosh, 45,000 times 4 years. That's a lot of money, isn't it? That's an awful lot of money. There's one more expensive school here in town, too. It's George Washington University. Apparently, it's the most expensive school, I think, at 50 or 51 a year. Most expensive school in the country. People pay big money for education. Do you necessarily get it back? Do you get it back right away? I studied liberal arts at a school that was predominantly known for engineering, Case Western Reserve in Cleveland, Ohio. I got picked on constantly by the engineers because I was going to be the hamburger flipper. And they all went right out of college. Yeah, they got decent jobs at Intel or Motorola, because a lot of them were chemical engineers, all chip factories and chip fabrication plants. These guys did good. Now, generally, a lot of them are miserable. They've moved into management if they've had to get the raise, but they're still not really that happy with it. And then I look at what we've put together and the lifestyle, and I say, hey, I'm doing all right. Do I owe it to my history degree? No, not necessarily. You don't need to study history to be a real estate investor. In fact, there's probably nothing specifically you need to study. That's what I love most about this. Barriers to entry. Are there any? No. Does it care if you're male or female? Nope. Does it care if you're black or white? Nope. Does it care if you were born here or born in another country? Nope. Does it care how tall you are, how heavy you are, how thin you are, what color hair you have? No. None of that at all. In real estate investing, that's why it's such a great hotbed of the American dream. Where's the barrier to entry? Look around, folks. It's a pretty mixed room, right? We've got a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different languages. And so what? Each and every one of you has equal chance. It's like the great equalizing force. How many industries are like that? With no particular education needed. Wow. An education, the only education you need is the education you get right here. You don't need a four-year degree, and then you don't need another 4 years of whatever school, and then a residency or an internship. What you need is the desire to make it happen. Get yourself more than enough knowledge to be dangerous. Get out there and do it. Get out there and do it and make it happen. That's what we're talking about. So no, I'm not a genius. What word is that on the screen? Mm-hmm. I failed that spelling test in second grade. How about this one? Anyone recognize what my problem is? Dyslexia. Constantly got it backwards. For the people who really understand dyslexia, cookie, the I and the E are reversed, the O's are also reversed. Trust me when I tell you, the O's are reversed. And I used to screw that up, and my poor mother would sit there. We called it the Thursday night fights. You had the pretest on Monday, spelling pretest on Monday, the final test on Friday. I would get pretty much every single word wrong on Monday. And Thursday night before the Friday test, my mother would sit there. We'd sit at the kitchen table, and she'd scream or cry or try to be nice. Just try everything. You can meet my mother in a little bit. And try everything to figure out what was wrong. No one really caught it. It was fairly simple. So it didn't work very well. I was another failure, too, because what else did that tie into? Things always kind of looked backwards to me. Tying that freaking shoe was tough. I used to cheat, just kind of pull it. This is before the Velcro days, right? Kids have it easy now. Velcro's easy. Velcro, it's like you don't even need to learn how to handwrite anymore. You just type. But Velcro's easy. I used to pull that lace tight and just kind of tuck it in, hope it would hold. Now, what kind of living is that? So no, are you learning from a great specialized knowledge? Well, Tom's special. He must have been born special, a silver spoon in his mouth, all that knowledge of it. No, you're not. You're learning basically from an idiot. I screwed it all up. It was all backwards. All backwards. No. And so, yeah, I finished last a lot of times. And not just because my name starts with a Z. I was always alphabetically last with a Z. I was last in gym class. Any sport that had to do with guys, I think we all probably know, girls too, right? Is there any better feeling, any worse feeling than when you're standing there and they're picking teams, right? Yeah, we've all been there. They're picking teams. And you're still standing there. and nobody wants you. Any sport with a moving ball, I was not good at. Some of it was the dyslexia. Some of it was just not being good at that stuff. So no, you're not learning from any special genius. The running sports I did okay in. And I'm from Buffalo, so ice hockey came around. That's not really a ball. But anything else with a ball was bad news. So yeah, no, I know what it's like to stand out. Think about that. Everyone laughed a little bit, yeah. So you can go from that. You can go from being the last one chosen, from being horrible at all that, and turn it around. This business is the great equalizer. That's what's really cool about it. So what happens? What's the number one fear? Public speaking, I hear, and failure. Yeah. They always say public speaking is like one of the, it's like the number one, number two fear. So it's like fear of, a lot of people fear death and then fear of public speaking. Well, I agree to a degree. I actually think that's nonsense. You know why? You can avoid public speaking. Think about it. If I don't give you a microphone and you don't come forward, you don't have to public speak. So it's not going to, it's an avoidable one. If you don't, I used to stutter a lot and have a lot of ums, and I almost out of torture, I would volunteer to do the readings at church. Because then you realized how bad you were. And then you had to go and get better at it. And also, remember when voicemail first started coming out? Yeah. It was like early 90s or something. I had like a little job and they had a voicemail account for people. And I used to listen to my messages before I would allow them to be sent. And I was horrible. It was ums and stutters and ums and some more. And so you can get over that. So my point is, the biggest fear, public speaking, yeah, maybe. But you can avoid that if you really want to. So I think, honestly, most people's number one fear, not being able to take care of your family. That's really, at the end of the day, what we're all worried about. And this has been acute for me. I think about it more and more with the little guy. He's 2 years and 3 months now. Yeah, you think about it differently. How many people here have kids? Did your life change when you had kids? It's cliche. I heard it all the time, like, yeah, my life will change. Yeah, it does. You think about things differently. You just do. You hear about race car drivers that lose their nerve after they have kids. You know, right? People, even some of the military, you come off the front lines and you go for an office job or something in the background, because you're thinking about your kids. And at the moment of truth, you might flinch, and that would be dangerous. So you leave it to the 18-year-olds that still think they can rule the world. That's a lot of it. So honestly, I think number one fear is not being able to provide for your family, letting your family down. No one wants to go home and tell the husband and wife, I failed. Or we can't make ends meet this month. And no one certainly wants to tell that to their kids. You certainly don't want to wind up not being able to afford the Christmas gift that they just have to have that year, because that's the one that's been aggressively marketed. So honestly, our number one fear, put public speaking aside, because you can control for that. What you really can't control for is letting your family down. And everyone's got family. There's a few true loners out there, but come on, let's be honest. It's more about that. So where did this knowledge come from then? Is it all me? Did I make it up? The stuff I'm going to teach you tonight about all the different control points, have I just thought of this? No, I've learned it from other people. I've learned how to be successful through other people, and I want to introduce those people to you so you can learn to be successful through them also and the things that I've learned. Who's the first one? I doubt anyone's going to know this guy. His name's Don Philibom. Entrepreneur, and had a business photographing graduation ceremonies. And in high school, I applied for a job with him to photograph graduations. I was 14 at the time, 14 or 15. And I showed up, again, I'm from Buffalo, New York, but the interview was in Akron, Ohio, where he was based. We drove, because I wasn't old enough to drive, so Mom and Dad drove me down to the interview. I went, didn't tell anyone my age, went through the different trainings, the things, and the guy said, he was deciding who he wanted to have, give a fair bit of responsibility to, go and photograph each and every graduate as they receive their diploma. And he really wanted to hire me. You got to fill paperwork out at some point, right, when you get a job, correct? You're not going to escape the paperwork. You got to fill out your IRS forms and whatnot. And they looked at my birth date, and everyone was a little confused, and there was a little bit of a scandal happening. Like, well, what? And good business sense Don had, and the ability to make a decision quickly. And he basically looked at everyone, this kind of swarm of people going, are we out of our mind? He's a kid. And he looked at me, he's like, and he just said out loud, he said, 5 minutes ago, I really, really liked the kid. That doesn't change just because I know his age. Hire him. Done. He gave me a chance. I forever appreciate that. Because the guy was a hyper entrepreneur. He had a couple other businesses going too, and you always saw it, and it just, his ability to kind of do everything at once And the organization that it taught, because to control the situation, like graduation photography, well, it took a little something. You had to know where to go and what to do, and there was customer service at the same time. There were a lot of different, like a real estate deal, a lot of different moving parts. And as long as you understood what those moving parts were, and he had a really good way of breaking it down, and taught me a lot, again, at a young, impressionable age, because I'm 14 years old. I couldn't even drive to the events. Mom and Dad had to drive me to work every time this happened. And the nature of it wasn't like driving me to the mall. These were events happening at various high schools or universities in different parts of the Northeast. So there was a lot of driving involved sometimes. It's kind of interesting the way it works. I learned a lot from Don. I think I got a lot of my initial entrepreneurial spirit from Don because I saw how that worked. I saw the lifestyle he had, the car he drove, the house he lived in, the family he had, and the family life he had. I went, huh, oh, you get that with a business. Really? Okay. And he seemed to have some free time to enjoy it. Because I saw doctors with the same lifestyle. I saw lawyers with the same lifestyle. But what I also saw and listened to and felt was what they said on the side. They didn't have time to enjoy any of it. Boy, that's a great sports car that they manage to drive to and from work every day, and that's about the most they get to enjoy it. And it's great to have that house that they're not spending that much time in, and a family and all the kids that they didn't have enough time to spend with because they were so busy in the careers. And then I watched this guy kind of come in like a whirlwind, and I said, oh, that's interesting. And as I got older, I started thinking, okay, there's something to that entrepreneurial edge. It makes sense. So that's Don. Anyone recognize this fella? Yes, you can have mentors and people that aggressively have done a lot for you, but yet maybe you never knew. I feel like I've known him. I've read a ton of his books. Winston Churchill, right? Prime Minister of England, leader of the Allied cause during the Second World War. I'm actually going to do a whole video series on tips I've learned from Winston Churchill. I'm serious, when you realize what people have left behind, the legacy they leave behind in terms of the writings they have, the lessons they've learned, and those things, it is, sometimes running a business feels like fighting a war. The nice thing is, at least no one's dying along the way, and you're following what's happening, but I learned a lot. The organization, I'm about keeping business in writing. He conducted that entire war in writing. It was all telegrams written in. So he says, if it's not in writing, mistakes are going to be made. Make sure it's in writing. And I've thought about that. And writing is so much easier now than it used to be to conduct a business in writing because of email. It's so easy to document what happens. And think about it. We do that all the time. What did the attorney say? What did the seller say? What did the buyer say? What are these notes here? What is that? Because you get distracted. There's so much going on. That's one of the key points I've taken from Winston Churchill. So I've learned a lot from Winston Churchill, as nerdy as that sounds. And I've read a ton of his books. And trust me, he's a big mentor to me. Last mentor is my mother. I already spoke about my mother a little bit. That's Linda Zeeb. And she, patience, perseverance, dealing with the adversity, you know, what the heck is wrong with this kid who can't spell head and cookie? And I was threatened. I would never eat another cookie unless I learned how to spell it right. And you get things like that. So think about that to a degree. Are your parents mentors to you? What, think about the lessons they taught you. Think about the lessons you teach your kids, or your grandkids, or your nieces and your nephews, and just kids. Think about that from that perspective, and think about what that means to people. It makes a big difference. So you're going to learn through them. Everything I'm teaching you tonight is distilled in. It's distilled in from your mentors. Think about who your mentors are, because it's a nice exercise. Also think to yourself, have you been wasting your time and your money? Are you wasting your time and money? Is it literally going down the drain? You flushing it all down the toilet? You might be. You might be, particularly if you don't get your mind around the level of control that's needed to get a deal through. Both the personal control, the personal discipline, and the business discipline that's needed to make it happen. Not that difficult. Not that difficult. You just need to think about it. But a lot of people let it go. Oh, I got busy. I got caught up. This happened. That happened. Something else is always going to happen, folks. Life's always going to get in the way. When is now going to be the time? You realize it's a personal decision. You have to say, okay, I'm serious about this, and if I got to stay up half the night to get it done, I'm going to do it. Or if I got to skip this to do it, I'm going to do it. You got to have the motivation behind it. Otherwise, everything will go right down the tubes. So, is there a solution? Yes. Can it happen immediately? Pretty much yes. Can you assimilate it in your life? Yes. You just have to know exactly what you're looking for. So what's our particular goal tonight? I want to teach you how to protect yourself and to conduct business as a good business person should. That's 3 points. Protecting your deal, protecting your position in that deal, protecting your profits. This is profit protection. This is deal protection. This is making sure that the rug doesn't get pulled out from underneath you, either advertently or inadvertently, because it happens. There's moving parts. Things happen. There's moving parts. You got to be aware of what they are so you know what the risks are. First principles, I want to put a baseline down out here so we make sure everyone knows what they're looking for. I put this in here specifically, one, because it'll frame everything else we talk about tonight, but also because I find this with my coaching students is one of the number one things. There's three numbers you absolutely have to know whether or not you have a deal. If you don't have a clue what these three numbers are, we don't really know whether or not you have a deal. So everything's going to track back to this. And what are these three numbers particularly? Three numbers. If you don't know these three numbers, you just don't know. After repair value. How do we figure that one out? Comps. We get good, solid comps, and we learn how to make comps. You can ask a realtor. You can use the MLS. You can use something like Redfin.com. You can use some of these other comping services. I'd probably avoid something like Zillow. It's not really going to be that accurate. It's just kind of almost seems random sometimes. Learn how to make decent comps. Doesn't have to cost money. Doesn't have to take a ton of time, but it is going to take you a little bit of time. Time that's well worth it because it's one of the three absolutely critical numbers you have to know. So you can't really gloss over this point. Learn to run good comps so you can find out when a seller calls, you know what that property's worth. How else are you supposed to base anything else in that deal if you don't have an idea what it's worth? So if you're skipping that for some reason, you're going to lose control. You're going to lose control very quickly. Second number you absolutely have to know is the repair estimate. How much is it going to take? And honestly, the answer here is, how much is it going to take to make it worth what it is worth in number one? We didn't say fair market value, but we said after repair value. After the repairs are done, what's the place worth? That's probably different from what it's worth today, as is. That's one of our value plays. That's how we make money, right? Just taking a diamond in the rough and you know, stripping away all the junk, all the coal, and grabbing the diamond and cutting it nice and making it look real good. So what's that repair estimate? How do you learn this one? Any ideas? You're going to learn repair estimate by a little trial and error. It's going to be a little trial and error. Maybe you should, when you come to these meetings, you should get to know the rehabbers. The guys that come up front and say they did the deal and they rehabbed it. And maybe you should take them out to lunch. Maybe you should ask to go see the projects they have in place. And you should find out a little bit. Maybe you could hire somebody to give an estimate too. That's a quick way. And if you don't really have any intention of having them do the work, then you know, pay them to do the estimates. I only think that's fair. A lot of guys will give free estimates, but that's because they're anticipating getting the work, or at least having a chance at it. If they don't have a chance because you're just practicing, then you know, pay them for their time. You can learn how to repair that way. Ask questions. Come to a lot of the seminars we do on rehabbing. And it's how you estimate those repairs, because that's a critical number. You've got to learn it. Is it hard to learn? No. Do you got to learn it? Yeah, you got to learn it. Third number you absolutely have to know. The lowest price the seller is willing to take. Guess what? This one gets skipped all the time, too. How do we find this one out? Ask. You got to ask, right? So you got to ask, what's the lowest price you're willing to take? And just because you ask something doesn't mean you get the right answer. You got to negotiate it. So we're going to find this number out through negotiation. We're going to talk a little bit about negotiation tonight because negotiation and good negotiation skills is a key component of control. So if you don't know these three numbers, you don't really know if you have a deal. You're guessing. And you're going to spend all so much time like researching and figuring things out. But if you've missed these three numbers, you don't know. You don't know. And so you think about that going, oh, yeah. It all comes back to this. That's why we're starting with this as the first principle. So make sure you have all those written down. We're going to come back to those again and again. All right, let's get into the control points. Control point number one is seller control. Yeah, you got to control the seller a little bit. Hey, when I say control, is that making anyone a little bit nervous? It's like, wow, I'm trying to control people. I'm trying to control your deal. I'm trying to control your profits. And that means, yeah, I think a consummate business professional controls their situation. Yes, it's not control in a mean, nasty, ugly way. Control freaks. It's good control. So how does seller control work? What do you have to be looking for? Think about it. Pilots got to control a lot of things, right? So I thought a cockpit was an appropriate thing. You need to prove yourself credible. It's probably your first level of control in your marketing, in your first conversations with the seller. Anyone here do credibility packages? Can you talk to a seller? Yeah. Boy, you put raving testimonials from previous sellers that were happy about the way you helped them with the transaction? How about photos of your properties before and after? What if you don't have any? Maybe photos of a property you've been somewhat identified with. What if you have no real estate experience at all? Then how do you build a credibility package, Tom? Oh, I don't know. Are you an upstanding person in your community? How about your church? Will any of these people write you a letter? How about your work? Maybe you're not going to tell them you're moonlighting on the side, but how about a previous employer? Why not have them write a letter of recommendation for you? Put that in the package. You can put all this together. You put that in a credibility package, and you present it to the seller the first time you meet. Hi, Luis. My name's Tom. You responded to my marketing. You're interested in selling a property. You probably might be a little scared about it. It's a big transaction, selling a house. Because as investors, we might do it every day and multiple times a month, multiple times a year. But you know, what's it on average? It's like twice in a lifetime, right? Twice in a lifetime someone buys and sells a house. So remember, what we do in this room, a lot of transactions. What most, the average, you know, average Joe public, it's a couple transactions in a lifetime. So yeah, they might be, it's a big deal to them, isn't it? And they might be a little bit nervous about working with you because they don't know you. They got to get to know you. And so how do they get to know you? You have to present yourself well. You're prompt, you're courteous, you're professional. You present them with like a credibility kit. That's a very important point of control. Another point of control with the seller is making sure all the communication goes through you. Does that make sense? What if you have everybody on earth calling that seller? What if your buyer's calling the seller? The attorney's calling the seller? The termite inspector's calling the seller? If you have all these people calling the seller and not going through you, a lot of things can happen. What if you're doing a short sale and the bank's calling the seller? You know, every time they call, what do they start that conversation with? If you're a short sale, you're behind on your payments, right? So what is the legally obligated thing they have to hear at the beginning of every conversation? This is an attempt to collect a debt. Whatever the language is with that, they're creditors. They're collecting a debt. And so you go, huh. Now, how about it? So does your seller really need to hear that every time they talk to the bank? No, you ought to be talking to the bank and controlling it through them, particularly if they've already signed a contract with you. Keep that in mind. It's important. Keep in touch frequently. Wow. I'm a motivated seller. I'm Tom Zeeb, the motivated seller. Why am I motivated, generally? Something's gone wrong in my life, right? Something's wrong. I'm not motivated to sell the property to solve my problems. I'm a person with a problem. If you have a problem and you can't solve it, and someone comes along, and they're supposed to be your knight in shining armor, and they're going to help you, and you don't hear from them for 2 weeks, what happens? You start to get a little nervous, doubt that a little bit, right? Think about that for a minute. Get inside the mind of your seller. Keep in touch frequently. But what if I have nothing to say? Nothing's changed. There's no status change. Well, guess what? That'll be a real quick conversation. Bob, it's Tom. Just calling to tell you, not much has changed this week, but I wanted to reach out and keep in touch. Anything wrong with that? 60-second conversation, right? What if that saved your deal? Because what happens when someone gets nervous and panics? They might run away or go somewhere else or file bankruptcy without you knowing or sell it to someone else or sign another contract. Can they legally and technically sign another contract when it's already under contract with you? No. Does it happen anyway? Yes. Ask me how I know. Have I ever lost a deal that way? Yes. From a lack of poor follow-up. You got to follow up with people. Keep in touch frequently. Write this one down. Under-promise, overachieve. Heard that one before? Yeah. See how it just might apply to this business? Under-promise, overachieve. If you say, excellent, let me check with my partners and I'll call you back in 20 minutes. What did you just do? What if you can't reach the other person in 20 minutes? What if the phone's busy in 20 minutes? What if you trip and fall or stub a toenail or whatever, suddenly don't feel well? What if another call comes in and you can't get that person off the phone and 20 minutes went by? Now you call them back an hour later, guess what you just did? You overpromised and underachieved. That's not what we want. That doesn't look great. That doesn't look professional. That doesn't impress anybody. That's not going to get someone dying to do business with you. Do it the other way around. If you think you can get it done in 20 minutes, say, is it all right if I call you back at the end of the day or the next day? Give yourself more time than you think. Things happen, right? Things always happen, correct? Things always happen. It's going to take you a little bit longer than you think. Build that time in. It also shows patience and control, which is impressive. It shows self-confidence. It also protects you in case something goes wrong. And you're not going to, you know, it's not going to turn around. So under-promise and overachieve. Remember, you are always the one in control. So be in control. And that is, a lot of it's controlling yourself. And it's controlling your outlook and your approach. Control yourself, control your business, and that'll control your deals.
As a result of Tom Zeeb and his training, I wanted to let everybody know that I just quit my job recently. I'm doing real estate full-time. I have control over my life. I have time to spend with my family. And I'm making a ton of money, and I'm traveling, and I'm loving it. Life is great.
That is Carla Zagar. How many people know Carla? She's the woman turning bright red in the back corner right now. You weren't expecting that, were you? Oh, I looked over and she laughed because she sees herself on the big screen. Makes people nervous. So it's public speaking without actually having to public speak. You get all the embarrassment without the pain. Deals ever go wrong? Things ever happen that you didn't intend? Control a little bit important to protecting against that? Yeah. You've quit your job. You used to be, and you're now full-time real estate investor. Carla is one of our coaching success stories. Turned a lot of things around. Carla likes to dot I's and cross T's. Maybe that's the accounting background. Carla's paperwork, flawless. All her accounting for her deals, flawless. Every penny, every receipt, well organized, well accounted for. We're going to talk about organization later, too. That makes a difference. When you're evaluating, I'm going to get ahead of myself here, but when you're evaluating who you want to do business with, let's say a settlement company, if I walked into a settlement company office and I'm tripping over files and the place is a mess, is that a reflection on, everything else that attorney's office might be doing? Yeah. But if you walk in and it's spotless, and things are filed right, and all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, is that a reflection on the service you're probably going to get? Yeah, it definitely is. So it makes a difference. Carla's turned a lot of things around like that, and it's a matter of control. And when you lose control over a deal, I don't know. What's a good example, Carla? Like when your contractor decides to leave the country for a month, and that sets you behind, unfortunately, in a market that Claude talked about earlier, that those things can hurt when you lose control like that. Those are hard. Those are real life examples of things that happen. And control can be difficult at times. You have to be aware of it. That's why we're talking about it tonight. All right, what's another control point? Well, I'm going to give you lots of stuff on this one. We'll probably go long on this. This is my favorite topic. Control through power negotiation. Number one way you are going to control everything that you want to be doing is good negotiation and learning good negotiation skills. I need to do a quick survey right here, a quick show of hands. For how many people is negotiation almost a dirty word, or it's a word that causes anxiety and fear and discomfort? Anyone uncomfortable with the word negotiation? Yes, there's a bunch of you, of course. We're kind of raised not to love negotiation. Because as Americans, we don't generally negotiate much. You negotiate for cars and, I guess, mattresses. Almost everything else we buy, it's true, right? Go to mattress whatever store, and there's no prices on anything, right? There's no price tags. And then they feel you out and try to figure this, and it's upselling. It makes you uncomfortable. How about there's a sticker price on the car? Oh, but how many people dread going to buy a car? Because they're going to be. Saturn had made a whole, I think initially when they launched, but they had made a whole marketing campaign out of the fact that the price is the price. Right? We're not going to get negotiated with. And that was a big, I feel safe going there. People really dislike negotiation. Now, think about it also this way. That tends to be an American thing. If you're born in another country, you might have been raised that the price isn't always the price and you got to work it out. And now, think about this two ways. You're living here now and you're dealing with properties in this area. So what would happen? You think you might be coming across a seller that might be foreign born and you might be at a bit of a disadvantage as the American born investor or vice versa. So don't be afraid of negotiation. Learn some of the basic techniques. I'm going to teach you a bunch of them. It's not as difficult as you think. In fact, there's a lot of easy techniques you need to know so that it'll hit the mark and you can get the negotiations done. So I want to give you a handful of techniques that fit in perfectly to negotiation for real estate. How does it work for real estate investing? I'm going to give you six. Six out of my 43. I've got 43 techniques that I kind of roll through and use pretty much every deal. I want to give you some of my favorite six. First one, flinching. What's flinching? Anytime anybody says a number, a price, flinch. flinch how? I mean, flinch, physically flinch. Linda, say a number. Like, how much do you want for your car? $200,000. It's something like that. It's a very dramatic, very overt. And how did you feel when I reacted to your price?
Okay, you're not going to do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. Or there's something, that price is too high. It's obviously unacceptable to me, right? It makes it very clear what I, you know, that number's not right. That sends a signal. I don't care what the number is. You know, what do you want for your house? And she, you know, if she told me $1,000, I would still flinch. I want you to flinch no matter what. Don't think about why you're flinching. Just flinch. Okay? Because it's not necessarily that I object to your number. I just want you to think that I'm objecting to your number. Because when I think you're objecting to the number, then it's you think about things differently. So, okay, so that's flinching. If you're on the phone, the very close cousin of this is called the verbal flinch. I deal with a lot of out-of-town owners. I'm never going to meet them. I don't get to meet them. Carla didn't meet her last, we don't always meet the people. They're out of town. So you have to verbal flinch. How do you verbal flinch? You're on the phone. You have to make some noise. Dave, how much do you want for your property?
$1,000.
You're on the phone. $1,000? Wow, that's a lot of money. So you have to somehow verbally flinch on the phone. Think about that for a minute and verbal flinch on the phone. Is this an easy technique? Yes. Anyone not understand what I'm saying with this one? Okay. Can you do it this week? Can you do it the very next time you have to, anyone says a number to you? I don't care. Do it at Safeway. Just see what happens. You know, I mean, the price is the price. Oh, everyone laughs. But, we've done this at stores. Well, because, you know, Carolina and I like to have a good time with this. We've done it at stores. The next thing you know, you're getting like a 5 or 10% coupon. The manager's coupon. Where'd that come from? I'll take it. I don't care what it is. It was fun to practice, and that's it. Oh, you should see us when we're traveling overseas. Oh, then it's fun. Then it's fun. We get into character. We flinch. A lot of times, we do a little good cop, bad cop, you know, or like husband, wife. Like we have these little fake fights over like, honey, you're spending too much money. That's a lot of money. And then, you know, you're watching the price drop. The salesman doesn't want us to leave. I'll leave the store. I'll act disinterested. She'll act like really interested. And then we'll pit ourselves against each other. It's fun. Negotiation can be fun. It doesn't have to be that, no, negotiation. I don't like negotiating. You know why I don't like negotiating? Because it's a close cousin, maybe, and you're thinking high-pressure sales tactics. I don't like high-pressure sales. People are going to force me into selling something. That's why you don't like negotiation. It doesn't have to be that way. Negotiation's actually a lot of fun when you learn the techniques. So that's flinching. I want everybody flinching this week. Splitting the difference. We all kind of know this one, but I want you to think about it just a little more formally, splitting the difference. It sounds really nice. It sounds good. Americans love the concept of splitting the difference because it's fair. We love this concept of fairness. Philosophically, you can argue if fairness even exists. It just doesn't, does it? How can it? Is it fair? I mean, I'm one of two kids, and you read any of the psychology on like firstborn, secondborn, thirdborn child, middle child syndrome, right? There's all these syndromes. Is that fair? You have no control over it. You're born in the order you were born in, and it's just not fair. There's no fairness, but we like fairness. Fairness is an ideal we strive for. So splitting the difference comes across as very fair. If we are close in price, how much are you asking for that house?
$1,000 bucks,
but I've offered you $500. At a certain point, if we're stuck, what's a natural thing to do? We'll meet in the middle at $750. That's a very natural thing to do. In fact, people really like that because they go, oh, yeah, I guess that's fair. I've had this with people before. I've had this with sellers. We're stuck. I got my maximum allowable offer. I'm like, I'm at 220. They're at 230. They can't seem to get any more. And you say, all right, look, what if we meet in the middle? What do you mean, like 225? Yes, that's exactly what I mean. 225, would that work? The trick with splitting the difference, and write this part down too, you generally want the other side to suggest it first. You don't want to be the one to suggest it. Why? We're getting a little psychology here. You want the other side to feel like they won. And if they suggested it and you agreed to it, you were agreeing with them. So it's nice to, if you want to split the difference, great, try to prompt them, try to goad them into thinking that, hey, maybe split the difference. If they won't, then just go ahead and say, hey, let's split the difference because that's fair. Higher authority. Yes, ma'am. Sure. Good question. She says, dialogue that would prompt them to split the difference without, you know, totally giving them the idea. Say, wow, Ginny, you know, you're at 230, I'm at 220. We're so close. We've put so much into this already, and we've been working so well together up to this point. I'd really hate for this not to work. Isn't there anything we can do? maybe we could, I don't know, and then see what they say, meet in the middle, Tom? Yeah, so a simple conversation like that, that would absolutely do it. All right, higher authority. What do I mean by that? Always got to keep your resort to higher authority. I talked earlier that we're lone wolves. We're loners, right? So we're all in charge of our own business. The buck stops where? The buck stops here, right? The buck stops absolutely where you are. So how do you kind of fix for the fact that you can't say, well, let me check with my boss? But you have to. It's a great negotiating technique to not let them pin you down. So always have a higher authority. It might be a committee. It's your people. It's your underwriters. It's somebody out there. And it doesn't really have to necessarily exist. It's just people you got to check with. That way they can't pin you down in the price. This is a technique to get them. So you say, okay, you know, $220,000, Heather. If I'm able to get our people to go for that, do we have a deal? And you're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, 220. And so I'm going, all right, great. The thing is what did I do there? I told her that there's other people that have to approve this. And now if I come back and say, you know, I took it to my guys and the best we can do is 210. Well, she's now kind of got an answer for that. And I've got to go back to the committee. If it was just me, she could pin me down for an answer and say, no, why won't you do 220? Tom, just give me an answer, 220, yes or no, not 210. Now, what did I also not do? And this is an important point. You got to make sure you write this down with this. Notice I said my people, it was the committee, my guys, is plural. It's not a singular person. Because if I said, Heather, I can't do 220. I can only, you know, Dave says I can only do 210. What? Let me talk to Dave. You didn't even hesitate to say that. Let me talk to Dave. So if you want to keep control over this, you've got to make sure that it's not an easily reachable group. Does that make sense? Because it's not, if it's an easily reachable person, they're just going to literally cut the middleman. They're going to shove you right out of the way and go right to the source. So if it's a group, particularly a not easy to convene group, oh, this is used on you all the time, isn't it? Yeah, it is. You hear this a lot. I don't know, phone sales or in a car. So keep that in mind. Use it to your advantage. Printed word power is another great technique. You believe something more when it's, written down in the newspaper, on TV. That just sounds more real, doesn't it? I'm sorry, sir, there's no smoking in here. And they refer to the sign on the wall. Hotels used to have a harder time. People would argue about the checkout time. Now where is it? On the back of the door. Also, kind of amusingly, what's on the back of the door? The rack rate, which is usually something ridiculous, like, you know, it's $2,000 a night for the hotel room, because that's legally what they could charge if they ever had to. And so then you feel like you've gotten this massive discount. So there's those things in there. It's the power of the printed word. Well, it must be official. Wow, $2,000 a night, and I'm only paying $120. Sounds like a good deal. And I'm not allowed to smoke in here because the sign says. Oh, and there'll be, you know, there's a $100 penalty if I do smoke in here for the cleaning fee, and that's written down now too, isn't it? It's all written down because there's a power to the printed word. How do we use power of the printed word as real estate investors? Oh, I don't know, providing comps to a seller, providing comps to a buyer, proving your price in writing from different sources. Why do I specifically like to see comps coming out of the MLS system? It's official, the MLS says. So with a seller, I'll show them other comps for similar properties, because what happens a lot of times is sellers have, what, inflated ideas of the value of the property? Yeah. Or they're saying, but the guy down the street sold his property for $300,000. Why is mine only worth two? Well, his is a four-bedroom, three-bath. Yours is a one-bedroom, one-bath. Why do you really think those are the same? Sometimes you can argue that till you're blue in the face. I have. And then I realized, wait a minute, what if I present it to them in writing? What if I show them? Because they don't always believe you until you show them. Show it in writing. Power of the printed word, very, very, very powerful. Bracketing. It's an interesting concept. What does he mean by bracketing? How does bracketing work in negotiation? Bracketing is kind of framing. You know, you have a range. And since we know people tend to think of splitting the difference as the fair point, Steve, if I asked you how much you want for the property and you said 300, and my maximum allowable offer was 200, what should my opening offer be? It should be around 100, shouldn't it? Because I got to bracket it. So I'm putting your price in the middle. So bracketing is basically, you want to be equidistant below your target as they are above your target. Because you will find that most, and I think about this so much, it's just weird. You almost always wind up at the split the difference mark. Just the way it works. because that seems to be a reasonable thing. So that's bracketing. Bracket your initial offer. Give yourself room to come up. Write this one down. They need to bring you up in the negotiation so that they feel like they won. Because who feels like they won is really important. It is. It's important in a negotiation. You want that seller to walk away feeling like they won. Or you want your buyer to walk away feeling like they won. You want whoever you had to deal with in this deal to feel like they won. So let them have that feeling. Don't deprive them of it. Do not deprive them of it because you'll lose control. You'll lose the deal or you won't get repeat business, whatever it happens to be. So bracket your starting offers. And I lied. You know what, Steve? My first offer is not $100,000. You know why? I'm trying to get him to 200. Because if he's saying 3, I'm thinking I want to get it at 2, and I start at 100. If I just say $100,000, what does that sound that serious to you guys? Or what did I just do? I'm just kind of spitballing here, right? I'm pulling numbers out of thin air. Hi, 100,000. He said 3, I said 100. What if I came back to you and said, I'll offer you $105,579. 105,579. What's your response now? Ooh, he thought about that number, didn't he? That's scientifically calculated. He really, Make sense? You see it. Now, what did I really do? That's really a number pulled out of thin air. But it doesn't sound that way, does it? How pure is ivory soap? 99 and what is it, 97, yeah, right, 44 one hundredths. Why not just say 100%? Close enough. Why not say 99%? Close enough. But boy, those Procter & Gamble scientists must have really, those chemists must have really sat down and figured that out. It's 99 and 44 one hundredths. That makes a difference, doesn't it? That was a big part of the marketing. You believed it without questioning that number because it was specific. And if it wasn't that specific, you would have questioned it. So every time you make an offer, again, is this an easy technique? Is that understandable? Does anyone not understand this, right? This is easy, right? Can you do that this week on your very next offer? Yes. Your very next offer, resist all temptation to give an even number answer. And put something weird in there. All my offers, Heather, the offers we've made together, Louise, the offers we've made, 579 tends to be my favorite. You've come up with your own favorites. The last offer you sent out, it had like a, it was something else. It was like 389 or something. It was something down those lines, right? Because those offers make a difference. I don't want my final contract prices to have that. And why not? I'll throw this as an extra tip. Why do I not? I don't want anyone to agree to my odd number. Because what does that mean? That means they agreed to my first offer. I don't want them agreeing to my first offer. That means my first offer wasn't low enough and I left money on the table. So when I have contracts that are signed with that odd number, that actually means I screwed up. Think about that for a minute. Think about that. You don't actually want them agreeing to that number. This is a starting offer. It's a low starting offer so that they can bring you up in price so they feel like they won. All right, so is negotiation fun now? Was that reasonable, right? Is that scary? No. Those were easy enough. We can do those, right? Show of hands. We can apply those instantly. You're better people now for having known this. You're better negotiators. Oh, I'm serious because this isn't just real estate. All these techniques, all 43 techniques that kind of make up your spine, they make up the backbone of your support structure, not just for this business. The next time you buy a car, they really need to check with the sales manager, sure. They're in there discussing the sports scores, okay? They're not talking about you. Get over it. Right? They are not talking about you. They are in there discussing the sports scores, and then they come back and like, I'm sorry that we couldn't do that price. The sales manager said, this is the most I can do. And now you dig your heels in at that price. The trick was to stop you from going any further. All right? That's what we're after with that. Here's Michael Block.
The first two deals I did, I had a combined profit of $110,000 off two properties. We bought them and renovated them and sold them within 6 months on the first and 8 months on the second. Tom and Profitable Partnerships, really what they did is they helped jumpstart my real estate career. They taught me everything they knew about marketing, sending postcards and signs and things of that nature, and how to negotiate, how to handle the phones, kind of what to say to help them, help the seller be more comfortable with you. And those first two deals I did within three months of signing up. And so without their help, it's possible I would have figured it out on my own, but it certainly would have taken a lot longer, and I probably would have made a lot more errors. So for me, it was the way to jumpstart my real estate investing career.
Right? Shortcuts. That's what this is all about. Getting you up to speed much faster. Figuring these things out. Negotiation isn't that big of a mystery once you figure it out, and that's what we show you how to do. You know, it's the first time I've done this presentation, so I know I'm running along. So I'm going to move fast. Are we all right with speed of consumption? I want to ride roughshod over anyone. I want to give you as much as possible, and I do want to get through all the control points. Point number three, you write the contract. Doesn't that make sense as a control factor? If you're the one writing the contract and writing the paperwork, it makes a lot of sense. You will control every little piece of the puzzle then. Don't let other people come to you with their contracts, because then you have to do what? You have to dig through their contracts. If you control the contract, it keeps it simple for you. There's enough moving parts. Try to simplify your business life in this respect. There's no mystery as to what terms are in the contract if it's your paperwork. Your paperwork, your terms. Make sense? Yeah. Someone on your team having written the paperwork. Not good question. She's saying her specifically or someone on her team. You don't want to wind up with, don't use your buyer or your seller's paperwork, because then you've really got to review it. And it takes a lot longer. You will have no doubts about the agreement if you're the one that wrote it. And in fact, it makes reviewing the changes a lot easier. God bless you. It makes reviewing the changes a heck of a lot easier. Because then if anyone makes a change, you know what's important to them, and you just look at the changes they made or the addendum they provided. But if you wind up signing someone else's contract, you've got to read that thing word for word and understand it, and it's complicated. You probably have to have your attorney review it. You're running up bills. It can get really kind of crazy. It keeps you in the top spot when you are the one providing the paperwork. Now remember, psychologically, you want to be the one in control too. Control and that self-confidence means that you're a player and someone to be reckoned with. And even if you've never done a deal before, and that's the number one problem we run into with students, that self-confidence, but I've never done it before. How could I ask someone for that? How could I do that when I've never done it before? Don't worry about it. Do it. Do it as if. Do it as if. That's your contract control. How about making your buyers qualify? Wow, do you think that might be an interesting control point? This applies specifically to wholesalers. If you're looking for a buyer, shouldn't you find out whether or not they qualify? Because so much of your reputation and your deal and your profits are depending on that buyer. So yeah, I would say you got to make sure they qualify. Who does the seller know? It's a motivated seller, which we established earlier was someone with problems, right? Someone with a problem. And they are looking for the knight in shining armor to solve that problem. If you then, as a wholesaler, flake out and get a crappy buyer, and the deal falls apart because of that, who is the seller mad at? Okay, who let the seller down? Not really so much the buyer, it's you, because you didn't control for it right. So what do we do about buyer control? And remember again, it's all about you. It's absolutely all about you in this case. That's why we're talking about control. A lot of people don't want to be, is that self-centered? Wow, time you teach yourself to be self-centered, it's all about you. This is business, yes. It's not personal, it's business. Get to the point and make the stuff happen. Send all the info to a buyer that they need to decide. Number one error I see, because you can imagine I'm on pretty much everybody's wholesale list in the universe, right? I just get hit with this stuff all the time. I look at these emails, they're crap. There's not enough information provided for me to know whether or not it's a deal. I got to go dig up all the information. And sometimes there's not even, those three critical numbers, you think maybe that might be a good thing to provide in your email messages to people? How about asking for proofs of funds? Oh, yeah. Wow. But Tom, I've never done this before. I'm new. I can't ask somebody to send me a copy of their bank statement or their line of credit statement. They really want to, take a big black magic marker and cross it out. I'm going to hold all questions to the end now, just because otherwise I'm going to fall horribly behind. We just did that with Neva. You're going to meet Neva in a little bit. She had to ask her buyers and she was a little nervous. She's like, really? They're going to send me their bank account? They all sent bank account statements. And boy, was that a rude awakening. There's some people with a lot of money out there. Wow. Tom, really? There's people with money, even in the depressed, horrible economy, like we haven't seen for years, and the sky is falling? Yes. Oh, I'm talking some people with $800,000 cash, $1.2 million cash, sitting in the bank account, waiting to be spent. Spent on what? Spent on real estate deals. Whose real estate deals? Your real estate deals that you're going to find and wholesale to them. Oh, it was an eye-opening experience for Neva. Wow. As long as I find a good deal, there's people to buy it, and they'll buy it with cash. And they actually have the cash. How do people have that much money just sitting in the bank? Because it adds up. You conduct business right and the stuff just starts to snowballs. That's what happens to the money. Yeah, it's hard to imagine when you don't have it. And then you look around and you go, oh yeah, I guess it does happen that way. So ask for the proof of funds. Don't be afraid for that. And do not give out the lockbox combo until you get a proof of funds. That's a degree of control. That's controlling access to the property, which is kind of important too, isn't it? because you don't want just random people walking in. So pretty much, when I say make sure they have all the info they need to decide, I put out everything they need to decide except the lockbox combination. They have to prove to me they're serious and they're interested, I kind of like their offer, then I give them the lockbox combo. Then they can get in to see the property on their own. Remember, you want to use your terms and your team. Key point of controlling the buyer. Don't wind up, we're going to talk about this again in a little bit, buyers. If you wind up at the buyer's team, you're at the buyer's attorney. Carolina, has this ever happened to us? Yeah. She says bitterly. You wind up with the buyer's attorney. So what happens when there's a problem? Who does the attorney call? They call the buyer because you're just an annoying middleman or you're someone they don't know. When it's your team, you can control it. When it's your team and something happens, they come to you and you call the shots. You quarterback the game. It's not the other way around. Don't reveal your contract price. Oh, this annoys the hell out of them. This really gets under buyer's skin. Why won't you tell me what you have it for? If you're wholesaling, I'm telling you, don't reveal your price. The original contract price that you have with the seller, you don't reveal that until they say yes. And this ties back into the last section about negotiation. Two sections ago about negotiation, right? If I have it for $200,000 and I've been marketing it for $220,000, all they have to know is that it's going to cost them $220,000 to get this deal. They don't have to know my underlying price and I have a $20,000 spread. Are they going to find out? Yes, of course they're going to find out. When they say yes, and we're going to go to settlement, then everything's going to be revealed to them because it has to be revealed for them because they are taking over that initial contract in a wholesale transaction. They're taking over all the rights and the responsibilities. So they have to see the contract and that will be revealed to them. But I don't reveal the price up front because then they just try to nibble my fee down. And I don't like that. That's my money. That's for my family. That's for my trips. That's for my retirement account. That's for my whatever. It's not theirs. So if you reveal it too soon, they start to nibble at that. If you get them to say, again in our example, yes to the 220, they want the deal, great. Now you provide all the paperwork. They had no other complaints. You've agreed on 220, and now you send the contract over, and it shows, you send the original contract over and your assignment, so they clearly know you're making 20 grand. Now if they have a problem, what are they doing? They're just nibbling at your fee. Did we like that? No, we don't. So that's how you know. That's how you isolate that issue and make sure. Because there's nothing wrong with you making whatever fee you can. If they were happy with their price, you're happy with yours. All right, control point number 5, using your team. We touched on this a little bit already. It's much easier when it's your own team, okay? Do you want to be, compared to inside or outside, do you want to be the inside? You want to be the inside guy? Or do you want to be outside? When this crisis hits, who do you want your team to call? You want them to call you. It has to be your team. If something else starts to go wrong and it's someone else's attorney, someone else's team member, they view them as the leader. Does this make sense? I haven't lost anyone here, right? Good. You want to make sure that you are viewed as the leader. If you're dealing with someone else's team, that's hard. It's home court advantage, basically, is what I'm saying on that. So use your team. Very important. Understand their role and your role. Your role is to facilitate whatever it is they need to get the job done. You take something to your team, and I tell my attorneys, I have the relationship with the seller. Sometimes I will let the attorneys communicate directly with the seller if it's for little things. Anything big comes up, you let me know. Oh, you need a copy of condo docs? Let me get it. And then I'll run over and get it and scan it and fax it and get it done because it'll get done a lot faster because even sometimes sellers, even when they're in trouble, don't do things fast enough, right? So you have to understand whose role is what. Who's making the bulk of the money in this transaction? I am initially. How much is the attorney making? They're making all their fees and doc prep fees and other stuff. They're making a few $100, maybe $1,000. But how much is the clerk that they have in their office making? The same amount per hour no matter what, whether or not your deal gets done. Does that make sense? So who cares more about getting this deal done? You. Yeah, me. So you have to keep that in mind. Understand your role. Understand their role. Understand the motivations. That's how you keep control over it. What else? Get a good legal team behind you. How do you meet a good legal team? Well, you can, you know, like I said, my students borrow ours. You meet attorneys at this group. We've had attorneys up on stage here in various months. That's how you meet people, and you put your good legal team together. Ask around. Ask other investors for team member recommendations. Need a good plumber? Ask around in this room. Need a good settlement attorney? Ask around this room. Who people need a good lender? Ask in this room. We bring them up on stage. We show people who it is. Talk to those people. Get their information and build your team that way. What if you're just starting off? use your buyer's team. Yep. And what do you got to recognize? That you've lost some control for doing that. But it works. What if you don't know what settlement attorney to use, but you happen across a wholesale deal, you get it done, and you find a buyer? Tell the buyer, fine, let's close with your team. You will get to know that team in the process, but recognize that you are in an inferior control position, and there's issues that come up with that. Just keep that in mind. You start the settlement process, you order the title work, and keep an eye on everybody. No one cares about your deal as much as you. Am I wrong? Okay. How many people have done deals before and they've kind of gone a little helter-skelter during the settlement process? And light bulbs are going off right now because you're going, yeah, that's where I messed up. Ooh, that's where the problem was. Oh, gosh, I see it now. Ooh, yeah, Tom's right. That stuff's kind of a little bit crazy. I also close all transactions where? At the kitchen table. No. At McDonald's. And then I go to the recorder of deeds. No. I close them all at a settlement attorney's office. Okay? West of the Mississippi, you'd say, escrow officer. East of the Mississippi, we say title officer, settlement attorney, or whatever it happens to be, right? Why? Attorneys licensed, right? Insurance, errors and omissions insurance, very expensive, right? Reputation to protect, a business and a life they want to maintain. So are they going to screw around? No. Okay. Is there credibility then to closing with the settlement attorney and making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed? Yes. Versus kitchen table closing. Think about this. Anyone ever get sued? But you know what, Your Honor? We sat at the kitchen table and you brought all these people to gang up on me. Who are all these people? I brought a business partner, my contractor to inspect the property, and a mobile notary to notarize the documents. And wow, that seemed really good at the time. And now as we sit in the courtroom, it looks like I brought a posse to intimidate them, doesn't it? Yeah, can you see that one happening? I can. I ain't interested. Settle at an attorney's office. It's just a lot safer, better for control.
I'm absolutely thrilled to be here and to give a testimony for Tom Z, TZ as I call him, and Profitable Partnerships. My name is Carlitos Willis. I met Tom Z after having a drought, long drought, and I remember seeing Tom Z at a RIA meeting where he spoke very specifically about knowing what to do with the deals not mattering at all if you don't have any deals. And that really struck a chord with me. I was very impressed with how systematic and how thoughtful the entire process was. He talked about the goals, took it from very big picture. What is it that you're looking to accomplish? And traced it all the way back throughout my marketing plan. We then systematically put in place a marketing plan that worked. I have to admit that during the course of that, I went, is this really going to work? And lo and behold, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months later, six deals were on the table. We closed two together. And then another two, right after graduation, closed really quickly. Profits were quite amazing. The techniques that I learned, I'm still using today. I am still a full-time wholesaler, still doing really well. But again, very, very impressed with the systematic approach, very impressed with how genuine and authentic. It has absolutely made me a better business person and absolutely made me a better wholesaler. I'm absolutely proud to know you.
Funny how sometimes when you talk about two deals that close together, he wound up selling one deal. One of his sellers wound up being the buyer of another deal. Funny the way it works out. Guy said, well, what do you need to make this deal happen? Well, I want to move across town. Across town where? He happened to have a lead over on that side of town as well. Do you think maybe he got a little more aggressive about following up on that lead because he knew he had a buyer for it? Yeah. So seller of one property becomes buyer of another. Does that work? Yes. There was disclosure all around. There was nothing to hide there. Guy knew, yeah, I'm selling you my house and I'm buying one from you at the same time. That works. Conscientious follow-up is control point number 6. Oh, yeah. Yeah, follow-up. Key to marketing. Key to marketing. All your communications with people. 3 P's. Prompt. Precise. Professional. Get those 3 P's down, drill them into your head. Prompt, precise, professional. All your communications with everybody. Prompt, precise, professional. do something when you say you're going to do it. That's why you don't want to, you know, overpromise and underachieve. You want to underpromise and overachieve, right? So you get the timing right on that. Precise. Answer the questions you're asked. Give people the precise information they need to make a decision. Buyers, sellers, attorneys, whoever it happens to be. And professional. Some people think sometimes I'm a little clinical in my writings, my emails, and you come across like an attorney. No, please, no. I'm dotting my I's and crossing my T's. I want to make sure everything's done right. There's a certain, you know, we can have fun chit-chat conversation later. But when it's business, keep it crisp, keep it clean, keep it to the point. If you follow these three P's in your communications with everyone, watch the way your business changes. Watch the way anyone's interaction with you changes, gets better. It gets a lot more precise. Precise is a good word. Think about that for a minute. Think about how many people are just really tripping their way through life. They're not living their life on purpose. They're not living it by design. They're living it in default. And they're just going about their way, going along to get along. They're not being precise in what they're doing. Be precise in your actions. Be precise in your words. It's a big part of that control that's going to lead to the deals that make good money. Control point number 7. Wow, properly educated. Does something like what we did tonight help? Yeah, there seemed to be a lot of ahas and heads nodding yes when we went through negotiation techniques. You see how useful that is, right? So we spent a lot of time on it. All these other control points, you think about it this way. How many people, have you really ever just stopped and thought about this business through the lens of control? No. I tell you, I think about it that way. And I thought about it more the last couple months, just some things that have happened. I said, that's what needs to be shared. That's what needs to be taught. When you get the right education, it all starts to make sense and the pieces come together. That's why you come to this group on a monthly basis. That's why you invest in different home study products. That's why you join coaching programs. Because it makes sense. That's why you went to school. That's why they taught you your ABCs and your 1-2-3s. Because you weren't going to figure anything else out without it. You got to be properly educated. What else do you get from that? You know what to watch out for. You get the deal done, right? You know what the traps are. Sometimes there's roads you shouldn't go down. Isn't that important to know? Just as important to know as the road you should go down, right? Can you learn from the mistakes of others? Or do you have to make all the mistakes yourself? No. Some of you out there, I know you have to make the mistakes yourself. You're going to see Mikey Fitzgerald in a bit. And that was Mikey was a guy who needed to be burned. You know, your baptism by fire? At the beginning, there was just some things I would tell him, he wouldn't listen. I would tell him again, he still wouldn't listen. And eventually I said, you know what? Go right ahead, Michael. I'm watching his back. That's my job as coach, watch his back. But there are certain things you need to trip up on because you're not going to do that again. Like the baby, right? Carolina, hot. Hot mommy, ring a bell, right? You touch the oven. It's a lot, there's different understanding of what hot is now when you were just trying to explain the concept of hot and that it might hurt. Some people need to learn that way. But if you can, and you should, learn from the mistakes of others, that is exponentially easier, cheaper, better, and more healthy for you. Learn from the mistakes of others. So when you hear these experiences, these stories, and you get a coach that has that experience, there you go. Oh, wait a minute. We can skip all the crap, jump right to the good part. That's a big part. That is the biggest part and the reason why. You got to learn from the mistakes of others. It's cheaper. It's faster. It's better. What else? Education and guidance. Eliminate the fear. Oh, yeah. Is there a little bit of fear in the business? All these bridges to cross. What am I going to do? I don't want to send out any postcards right now, which is bridge number 1. I don't want to send out marketing because, my God, I don't know what to do at bridge number 7. You ain't at bridge number 7 yet, right? You're not there. But you're worried about it. And you're not crossing bridge number 1 out of fear, out of bridge number 7 or 8 or 6. That's why having someone to lean on for that can really make a difference. Because you go, hey, I don't know, but I'm going to have my hand held when I get there. So I'll do this now and we'll worry about that later. That's the key. All right. Under promise, overachieve. How many control points did I promise to teach you tonight? 7. What number are we on now? 8, yes. We're on 8 because I like to under-promise and overachieve. I will live my example. I will make these make sense. All right? And so efficient and organized. We touched on this a little bit earlier. When you walk into that office and it's a pigsty, do you have a lot of trust and confidence in that settlement attorney, for example? You walk into a seller's place and it's a pigsty, great. Because that means there's money to be made. You clean that baby up, that's the value play, but with other people. So now think about it. Turn that around for a minute. You're the professional. You're presenting yourself like a pigsty, a living, breathing, walking pigsty. You're disheveled, you're a mess, your email communications don't make sense, you don't bother to punctuate, you don't bother to capitalize. What are you telling people? Yeah, you tell them you don't care, then you tell them that's the way you are. Wow, yeah, I want to do business with you. What if everything was kind of all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, it looked good, it looked right, it presented itself well, right? What if you looked like you were doing things with intent? Or did you look like you picked up the first thing lying on the floor and put it on to go to the event? It happens. There's a difference. There's a difference. Put a little pride in it. It's like that little pride of ownership. Makes a big difference there. So be aware of those who aren't. What do you do? Organization does wind up equaling total deal control. Okay? If you're disorganized, get some help. Think about it. Ask somebody else to do it. I don't know. Find a virtual assistant who is like that exact kind of opposite person from you, because that's good. It's like double strength can be an issue in a relationship between any two people. Double weakness is a problem as well. If you both have the same weakness, there's going to be an issue. If you both have the same strength, that might be an issue also. So if you are cluttered and chaotic and can't walk or talk or think in a straight line, that's fine. God bless you. But you better find somebody. God bless you. You better find somebody who can do that, because then they're a good balance for you. Otherwise, you're going to partner with someone who's just as chaotic as you, and now the two of you look like a mess when you present yourself to the world. So try to find that balance. Bring that balance into play if you have to. What are we going to do with that? Consummate professional is organized. You want to come across as professional. Imagine that. Yes. Yes, we're all a bunch of loners in this business, but does this mean we shouldn't be professional and treat it like the awesome business that it is? When you keep your ducks in a row, what else do you keep? What are we talking about tonight? Control. Keep your ducks in a row and keep control. Because it gets chaotic otherwise. You have everything chaotic, you can't find a piece of paper that you wrote something down important on. What if you can't find a contract that somebody signed? You lost it between their house and getting home. You sat down with someone, you don't know what, it happens. Ask me how I know these things happen. It's happened. We've trained so many students over the years with all different personality types. So sometimes I'm like, man, what do we need to keep a scanner in the car? I mean, you know, so you can scan it and email it to me right away. I'm like, I mean, now every phone has a camera. I'm like, you know, we got to what, photograph it so at least have some sort of record it was there because it disappeared into the vortex that is your life. I mean, these things happen. It's there. But I'm just saying, how do you expect to keep control over a deal and therefore protect your profits when you can't even control, you know, you can't keep everything organized? When you're organized and you have control, you can answer all the questions with ease, right? If a seller calls and has a question, a buyer calls and has a question, a attorney calls and has a question, if you're organized and you've kept everything there and you've really worked hard, because if it's not you, I understand. If you have a hard time being organized, I understand. Work on it. That's all. Work on it. And then put some systems into place. I know, and Carolina knows, and I'm going to say something personal about us, we are both freaking horrible at remembering to take something with us when we leave the house, whatever that is. Deposits for the bank, the keys to whatever property, whatever. The baby. yeah, exactly. We're horrible. So what do we have to do? What's the system to prevent us from forgetting things? Put it directly in front of the door. Not off on the cabinet to the side, not on the countertop to the left, because we will walk by it. That's just the way we are. We've come to accept that, and so the only way to fix that is to trip over the damn thing on the way out the door. Okay? That's it. Even though, like, a post-it note on the door doesn't work because you just ignore it. I literally need to trip over whatever physical thing I need to remember to take with me. I know that about myself. I've accepted it now. And so I say, how can I get around that? So if that's you, do the same thing. But when you have that level of organization, you can answer all the questions that come up with ease in the deal. Boy, do you think, Carla, taxes, your deals, all that organization, your wonderful statements, everything, I mean, literally, even the photocopies, Carla, honey, I mean, the receipts were in perfect alignment, everything was plumb and level at right angles, it was beautiful. Does that make doing taxes easier every year? Yeah, you bet it does. Wow, so you do a deal, and you know, a year later someone comes at you and asks you a question about it, or it's whatever, it's 9 months later and you're filing taxes. You think it's a lot easier when you've kept everything to with a degree of organization? Yeah, it is. It's all that. Paperwork tax is much easier. Keep an eye on your team members, your sellers, your buyers. Okay, that's key. That's being organized too. Who's supposed to do what when? When was that promised to me? When did the attorney say that title work was going to come back? Well, they didn't touch base with me. Did they have any issues? I don't know. Let me call and follow up. That was the toughest part for me, honestly. I never want to be perceived as a pest. You know what? I had to look in the mirror one day and say, Tom, get over it. Be a little bit of a pest. If someone told me, I'll have the title work back by Tuesday, I'll let you know what I think of it by Wednesday, and it's now Friday, and I still haven't called them, shame on me. Do I not care about my profits? Well, I care more about being perceived as a pest. There's nothing being a pest, particularly about holding someone else to their accountability. They said they would have an answer for me Thursday. It's now Friday. I still haven't called. No, shame on me. So it's good. If they're sloppy, dealing with them, be sloppy. We covered that already. Here's a testimonial from just a few weeks ago.
As a result of Tom Z and his training, I closed my first wholesale deal, and my wholesale fee was $13,750. So I would definitely recommend his program. I've been saying I want to wholesale for about 8 years. So I finally, once I finally put my mind to it, signed up in the program, and followed exactly what he told me to do, everything just fell into place. So I would definitely recommend it. It's a great experience. And Tom was there to help me avoid all the mistakes that he made when he started out. So it was really nice. Because in the beginning, you're so scared you're going to screw something up. So it was nice to be able to reach out to you and you say, oh, no, don't do that or do this. So it just helped a lot because I've read books about it. So I kind of know what needs to be done. But some things are different depending on what state you're wholesaling in. So that type of information was really vital for me to get from you. So, and it was nice to have someone that would anticipate what would happen in the future, and that way I can be prepared, have my documents prepared, and I would know what to ask the seller, and just make sure that we have everything in order. And that way as well, I'm assuring the seller and the sellers at ease, and they feel comfortable, and I find that once the seller feels comfortable, no matter what goes wrong, you know, they're just like, okay, it's okay, you know, because as long as they kind of build the trust that you understand and know what you're doing, that helps a lot on the seller side. But, I mean, the best thing about the program, I would say, is that it's not just that Tom teaches you to wholesale, he teaches you how to actually start a business. So that's, like, the biggest thing for me is that I actually started a business, not just, oh, I did a wholesale deal. Like, I know how to do marketing, you know, I know how to go out and make sure my business is an LLC or, you know, whichever you decide to do for your business, but you know that it actually needs to be incorporated, you know, just something and be a business and not just wholesale on the side as a hobby type of thing. So that's the biggest thing I got was this is an actual business, something I'm proud that I do, and so that's the biggest thing I got from the program.
Sound familiar, right? All kind of points we've been talking about tonight, points that make sense, points that mean a lot. Think about that for a minute. We had an eye-opening moment with Neva at some point when we realized, I said, no, honey, $13,750. Not bad, right? From a wholesale deal, probably she never owned. 14 grand, right, on average, right, basically. I said, what if you only did, let's not even set the bar very high, what if you only did a deal every other month? A whopping six deals a year. What's that work out to you mathematicians in the group? 14 times 12, times six. It's like 80 grand, right? Just about 80, yeah. $80,000 a year for only doing six transactions in a year. Wow, you mean, Tom, it could be that easy to replace my salary? To quit the job and not really have to worry about it? I said, yeah, it is that easy. You know what the difficult thing then is? It's realizing that you only necessarily need to be working on six things a year. I mean, one every other month, that's sparse. And some people can't handle that mentally. What's keeping you occupied every day? Well, hopefully it's marketing. It's the other things we're going to show you. It's getting all that rolling. But think about that for a minute. That's how easy it is to replace. Is $14,000, is that a huge wholesale fee? No, I'm going to show you some examples of what we get in a minute. It's not huge. It's a good wholesale fee. But when you start to look at the multiplier on that, okay, so a decent, average, easily attainable wholesale fee. 14 grand. six times a year, 80 grand. Does that sound like a decent salary in this area? Yes. Oh, but I want to make 100. Well, do another deal. Or raise your average up to 16 grand or whatever it happens to be. Okay? Implementation is going to be key. Do you get things done? Do you? Did you get some awesome ideas here tonight? You going to let them go to waste? No. No, you're going to implement. You're going to do it. You're going to flinch. You're going to bracket. You're going to use specific numbers. You're going to think about all these things. You're going to be a control freak, right? Because you're going to implement what happens. Otherwise, you've just got a notebook full of notes. Those notes need to come to life. You need to put them in the blender with some bananas and kiwi and drink it down and digest it and make it a part of you. Did anything I teach you, was anything particularly difficult? No. Okay. I'm told I have a talent for, you know, getting things down to their essence and being able to convey that easily. So did it work? Yeah. All right. So I didn't trick anyone, I didn't fool anyone. I didn't throw you a curveball that you can't handle, right? All those are very usable now. Don't let them go to waste. Don't let them go to waste. I want to hear the success stories. Repeat this formula. What if you turned around and started doing only six deals a year at 14 grand? You're making 80 grand a year. What if that was more than enough to cover everything? And what if then you start doing an extra deal and throwing it into an IRA? Like Jack was here earlier talking about the IRAs. What if you did it that way? Could you retire in 5 to 8 short years? Yes. Wow. This is a whole different way of looking at the money. It is easy, as I've proven to you. It does work, as I've proven to you. And you can do it, as I will prove to you. What was my first wholesale paycheck? My first deal. Payout was, $22,819.66. Wow, was I happy. Because I had been unemployed and I was a temp. I had a temp job that I couldn't stand. So was that good money? Oh, yeah. What if I only did that six times a year? Now what am I at? Right? I can't do, folks, I can't do math. I was dyslexic. I can't spell. I always said, I'm a phonetic speller. My father said, oh, please, you're a pathetic speller. I'm a pathetic speller, and I can't do math in my head. Carolina picks on me constantly. Darling, every time we go to a restaurant, what happens? I have to use my fingers. She catches me counting on my fingers to get the tip right. I can't do it. I can't do it in my head. And yet we make good money. Wow. How is that? Because it doesn't matter. My basic math problems don't matter. My dyslexia doesn't matter anymore. This is the great equalizer, right? It's the great equalizer business, okay? So that was a great first paycheck. The smallest wholesale paycheck we've had is $3,500. Now, how many people would be unhappy with $3,500 right now? What if it only took you 30 days? Not really that bad. That's a small check. Huh. Our biggest wholesale paycheck. This is wholesale, folks. Wholesale. This was done with students. We had a massive wholesale payday. $65,188 for property we never owned, never took title to, we're not on the chain of title, we flipped it. Why was it that much? Well, guess what? The buyer bought at exactly what the buyer wanted to buy at. We had just done such a darn good job negotiating it that we had a massive spread. Oh yeah, that was a nice payday. That was a very nice payday. Our biggest rehab paycheck was with that lady right back in the corner whom you met earlier. That's with Carla. That's our biggest rehab payout check. That's $232,916.44. So that's almost $250,000 payout on a rehab. Huh. Yeah, there's more money to be made in rehab, isn't there? Yes. Carla, slightly more risk occasionally in rehabbing? Yes, okay. But you accept that. You accept it. Because the paychecks could be larger too. But gosh, somewhere, if you wholesale for somewhere between $3,500 and $65,000, that's pretty good. And if you rehab for $250,000 check, that's pretty good too, right? Just, I had to put up with more headache, but I'll do it. So you just decide what fits you. Look in the mirror and say, hey, self, how you doing? What are you good at? What are you bad at? Just be real honest with yourself. And what do I need right now? Because everyone wants to go for the big bucks, but sometimes you're better off just going for multiples of the small checks. And then later you can go for the big bucks. It all depends. So what's average? FTC, Federal Trade Commission, says, I need to tell you what's average. So wow, all these years in this business now, what are we celebrating? 9 years? 10, basically. Yeah, it's 2011. And the coaching program since late 2004, early 2005. The average person does nothing. The average person makes nothing. But I'm not about training you to be an average person. We want you to be above average. But quite honestly, the average person does nothing. Yeah, legally compelled to tell you this. Average person does nothing because they just never get off their butt and do it. Oh, they have a lot of hope. They have a lot of aspiration. They have a lot of, but they don't get down. They don't get down to business. So yeah, when you do get down to business, guess what happens? So what happens with our students? We get these average checks. There's $26,000. There's $28,000. There's $25,000. Seeing a trend? $19,503.77. Gosh, now when does this stuff happen? Our average wholesale is just below 25 grand. You're all going to laugh, but it's 24,000. It's like 24,756 bucks. And I'm not just spitting out specific numbers to make. That's why I'm showing you the checks on the screen. I didn't think about it. I'm like, no one's going to believe me after I just taught you that technique. But it's whatever. You see the numbers here. That's roughly it. That's why we're showing you the proof. Oh, wow. Is that what proof's all about? Yes, that's what proof's all about. Budget. There's 25,9. There's the. Oh, that's my first check on 22,8. There's 10. 30,200. Not bad. Right? Those are average checks. That's what the average check looks like. So can I reveal my system? Is that all right? Did you get a lot out of tonight? Because I don't want to, I'm not going to ride roughshod over you. I want to keep teaching, keep telling you excellent, good tips. There's some good tips tonight, right? Some real gems. Real gems. Not just diamonds in the rough. I got rid of the rough. We pulled the diamonds out. So that's what I'm going to keep doing. Why do you do this? What's the point about some of this? Let me take a quick break, introduce you to the family. You've met Carolina. I'll show you more of Carolina. What do we do specifically? What do we like to do? What are we passionate about? Traveling is one. A lot of people, right? People get passionate for travel, for food, for family, for fun. There's different things. Some race cars, might be sports. Everyone's passion is a little bit different. Mine's traveling. Carolina's traveling. We like to travel. We like to go crazy places. There we are. This is a 5 or 6 week trip we took around the world. I'd always wanted to do a circumnavigation trip. You literally circumnavigate the globe. You just keep flying in the same direction. So we started in the Middle East, we went to India, we went to China, we went to Burma, we went to Hong Kong, and we flew back around. Did it all in sequence. You know what was awesome? We burned a healthy chunk of change on that trip. That trip cost like 13 and a half grand for 5 weeks of fun. But you know what? I closed two deals while we were gone. I settled them when we got back, but I mean, basically managed the deals while we were gone because we managed things, real efficiently. When I talk about keeping organized, it's keeping organized on the BlackBerry, it's keeping organized on the laptop. When you keep things organized, you can go be wherever on earth you want to be, literally, wherever on earth you want to be, because you're organized enough to keep things going. So we came back and did two deals. We made a $15,000 wholesale fee on one, and another one that was 28-something. So not bad. I think that paid for a $13,500 trip, right? Basically, I shot almost the proceeds of the first deal on the trip, but so what? It's a lifetime memorable trip. There we are in front of the Taj Mahal in India. We're on the Great Wall of China. And that weird-looking thing on the right is Shedagwan Paya in Burma, which is fellow Burma travelers here. I know, Steve. Good. So why Burma? Why something? We like crazy places. I like crazy places that most people haven't been to, and it's fun because it's adventurous. Because you know what? I never outgrew Indiana Jones. I haven't. I admit that, okay? That's it. And I want to raise my son the same way. Like, let's go do something wild, have fun, and live that kind of passion. So why not? I felt suffocated when I had a job. I was suffocating. It was the worst feeling. I was a runner in high school, right? Because I was told you ball sports weren't good, but running was. To this day, I don't run as often as I should. I'll work on it. But you know one of the reasons? I can't run on a treadmill. All that work, and then you wind up still in the same place? Drives me crazy. Reminds me of what it was like when I had a 9-to-5 job. I can't run on a treadmill, so it's horrible. What else happens? Hey, look at that. A baby was born, Carolina mentioned earlier. Where did she go in the labor? We were in this room, weren't we? Weren't we down on this end of the hall instead of the other end of the hall? I think we were. She went into labor right here at capillary area. Wow, if we didn't get out of her fast, that baby might have popped out right here. It was good. It was kind of craziness. So it's been fun. So now we got the baby. That changes things. We talked about that earlier. Hey, he's grown up a little bit. He likes to suit up and wear ties also. Because I think he looks more like, kind of looks like a Chippendales dancer because he's not wearing anything else. But you know, hey, we'll see. We got to work on that. So, time with family. What did we start with? Why are we in this? Time with family. Who do we not want to disappoint? Family. Isn't that really our biggest fear in life? Is not letting all these people down. That's what it's about. You met Carlitos earlier. Actually, you saw him with shorter hair on the video. he cut his dreads off. Look, what else did he say about that? He talked about some of his deals. He basically made 22 grand in 4 months. This was, and he was flipping smaller properties, cheaper properties, lower priced wholesale deals. Still added up quite nice, 22 grand. He said, I found the time had a very structured regimen, allowed him to line up his goals with the activities needed to accomplish them, created a system with immense amount of detail, supplied me with useful, real-life techniques and strategies, and that I'm extremely passionate about making a difference to someone else. I am, if that doesn't show. I think you can follow something you're passionate about, it makes a big difference in everything. It makes a big difference in what you think about all day long and why you do things. Loves teaching, loves wants the students. Mike Molina, 5 grand in 30 days. Is that bad? 5 grand in a month? Not bad at all. You do one of those a month, you're at 60 grand for the year. We want to thank you for your advice, teaching materials, both critical, successful outcome of the deal. We appreciate sharing your expertise as they got started. And I promised you would meet him later. There's Michael Fitzgerald, a younger Mikey. He's still young. A couple years ago, Mikey came to me pretty much just out of the Army, Army Airborne, jumping out of planes. Kid was so hyperactive, couldn't control him. He's a force, he still is. Who's met Mike? You've seen him around. He's a force of energy. I swear, he told me he did like 28 jumps. I'm like, well, yeah, and 26 of them, you landed on your head? You must have. Did the chute not open? I mean, how do you explain this kind of crazy behavior? But because of that, he's a sponge for knowledge. He took everything I said and went with it. Sometimes like, wow. And as I told you, a couple times he just needed to be burned. Because you would tell him something, he would kind of, and he just needed, your job as a coach and teacher is to kind of tweak the training a little bit. It's personalized. It's you got to tweak it to the personality of the person involved. Otherwise, you're just kind of preaching it out. That doesn't make any sense. You got to tweak it. So he did some tweaking. But look what he did on his first deal: $106,760.65. Oh yeah, look at those eyebrows. That was a happy man. Okay, he was going. Yeah, he's like, wow. I mean, eyebrows lit up and they exploded. And he's continued on. That photo now that's 5 years old. Oh, yeah, that's a five-year-old photo. I keep that because Mikey's still very active, still doing a ton of stuff. You heard earlier, he's selling deals. He's out there. Mikey's out there doing it. He didn't stop. He didn't let anything stop him. And that's doesn't have a higher degree, doesn't have education, comes from not a family with a ton of money, not at all. He's proud of the fact that he bought his parents' house out of foreclosure and managed to get them back in it. Oh, yeah, you could do it. Yes, this business is the great leveler. This is the great equalizer. We all can do it. All right. You have two options for success with us. We have our complete coaching program. We have our home study system. You want to learn how to do this? You want to get even more of these details? Did I do a good job? Did I boil it down to its essence? Did I convey some good stuff? Thank you. Hey. What if you had more of that? What if you had a lot more of that? Do you think you could become successful with that level of guidance, that level of breaking it down and then pushing you to be accountable for it? Does accountability help, current student in the program? Yes. Does it keep you on top of things? Okay. What would a lot of people's problem? A lot of people's initial problem is, I don't have any leads, I don't know how to market. You're now marketing and getting a very good response rate. And your problem now is keeping up with it all. And we're there for you to help you, okay, let's organize it, Luis, do this, let's cut through it, right? Heather, same thing, right? Yeah, absolutely. Current students in the program and saying, it's making a difference. Because you tried to do it on your own before? You've been in the business for a bit, yeah. How'd it go? Okay, I don't mean that to be too cheeky. I mean, honestly, not so much. It's making a difference now. You're bringing some leads in. We're looking at things. We spoke on the phone earlier today because that makes a difference. So having support is, helpful? Yeah, critical? Yeah, critical to success. So, Luis, United States Marine. Let's give him a round of applause. And in the Marine Corps, what do they do? Just hand you a rifle and say, go figure it out? There was training in the Corps? Really? I'm surprised. Of course there was training. You don't just hand a kid a rifle here and go shoot. Go here. Go protect your country. No, you got to train them, right? Train you to what? Sometimes to just follow the orders and don't. So what we try to do, break it down. How many times did you take that rifle apart? Yeah, God knows. But now you could do it blindfolded, right? And you said, that's the whole point. If you do this stuff enough, it makes sense. That's what we're after with that. So let me go through some of the options you have here. What do we do in the program? Our complete coaching program, we do weekly teleconference calls, teletrainings. You guys have been on some of those, and you're also able to download and listen to the recordings. Good content? It's been useful? Helpful? Okay, good. Solid stuff. Or is it fluff? Is it Tom babbling for an hour? Okay, no, it's serious stuff. Like, we gave some serious stuff here tonight. You're probably going, hey, you're giving all that out for free? Yeah, some of it. Yeah, there's more. What's that? They're usually live. Sometimes they're not. Depends. Depends on scheduling. Well, depends if I have one that I know was gold, I'm like, oh, that was good. Then that one can play through. Students-only website access. So, you need a contract. You need an addendum. You need something. Best part, where do you go for it? I go to the student section of the website, log in, download what you need. You're doing a wholesale deal in Maryland? Great, download the Maryland contract. Doing one in Virginia? Download the Virginia contract. Oh, wait a minute, there's extra addendum in Virginia. Download those too. Right? It's all there for you. Online Training University, the weekly online training modules. How are those? Yes, yes. Do you occasionally fall behind on the homework? Yeah, but you occasionally catch up. Yes, it's good. All that's good stuff. QuickSellNow.com. So, wow, how am I going to process all these leads that I get? Well, if we're going to do the marketing, the leads are going to come in. What about a call center? What about a website? We provide all that for you with Capital Area's Sell Quick, Sell Now website system. Practice for Profits, you've both been through that now, right? Is that a wrap on it? You haven't been through that yet? Okay, you have. You loved it. What's Practice for Profits? We have you call in and practice talking to sellers as if you did a blind outgoing call. Then what happens? Have you started this yet? Okay. We got you started this too. This is an excellent program. Steve's another student. And how about this? How about, what if you were called randomly when you weren't expecting it? And you had to ask the questions because the person that calls you is pretending to be a seller, responding to one of your ads. How many people, again, do you want to do live ammunition in practice? Or, you know, it might be good to shoot blanks at the beginning, right? So you don't screw a deal up. So you learn. What's the best thing about this? The calls are recorded, and then the person calls you back afterwards and goes through. What did you do right? What did you do wrong? Pretty cool, right? So excellent, excellent part of the program. Do role-playing calls. One-on-one time with your coach. That's me. That's Carolina. That's Tracy. You guys talked to everybody as well, right? Do we take care of you or do we ignore you? Do we take care of you or ignore you? Okay. Yeah. No, we don't. We're not in the business of ignoring students. Unlimited phone and email support, right? Call, write, anytime, get together. We've met. Not a problem. That's the best thing about a local program as well. You get real time with someone. We're not talking to someone in Utah on the phone. Anyhow, I picked on Utah specifically because it seems like all the big national coaching programs have the same call center in Utah. They're all just rebrands of the same things, folks. Rich Dad's program is what's his name? I can't think of it. Robert Kiyosaki, no, it's a rebrand of someone. He outsourced it to somebody, whatever. So it's always the same thing. The real estate fast track home study system, you got all the volumes. And that walks you through everything, provides all the contracts, all the details. The work style lifestyle system, have you guys been using that one? Oh, yeah, I talked about how on earth do you manage to do a circumnavigation world tour and do two deals? Oh, yeah, you mean you did all that off a phone and a laptop? Yes. How do you do it? This shows you how. Very cool. What if I don't want to travel the world, Tom? Well, what do you want to do? You want to sit on the beach? You want to climb a mountain? You want to sit at home in your pajamas in the lazy boy watching sports? Well, guess what? Use the same techniques to automate so business is happening so you have more time to do whatever it is that you choose. That's how that works. Accountability, tracking, and enforcement. Wow. How many people here think that maybe, just maybe, if you had somebody to be able to reach out to you and breathe down your neck a little bit or kick you in the pants nicely, with love, give you that boot with love when you need it, that would be helpful? Does that make sense? That would be very helpful because how many people are falling down because they're just not accountable to themselves? But if you had a coach, wow, I said I don't run as much as I should, and certainly not as much as I used to. Why did I run a lot in the past? Why did I run a lot in high school? A coach, I didn't have a choice. He beat my butt every day, keep running, right? Ice hockey, the same thing. You do it when you have a coach. Deal partnering, 50-50 splits on those deals. Oh, isn't that nice? Yes. Think about that for a minute. We going to walk away? We going to treat you as a pain in the ass when you call? No. Why? We want you to do your deals. Why? We're in for half. Well, do you think that keeps us accountable? Do you think that keeps us working? Yes. You think that makes sense? Would I trust a program that wasn't splitting deals? No. Wow. Yeah, because it makes a difference. Think about it. You buy some pricey coaching program somewhere. There's no splits on the deals. You call in, you're a pain in the butt because you have to be fulfilled and they got to get you off the line because there's no skin in the game. Oh, both sides have skin in the game now. It works really well. What's the investment on the coaching program? We have a range of program options available. They go from about 10 grand to 25 grand. that's a big investment. Yes, but what's it worth? What's that worth to you? If you were like Neven, you made 14 grand on your first deal. If you're like Carla and pulled down that $232,000 check, is that a big amount? What was my cousin paying at American University? 40-something a year, 45, 46 a year, times 4 years, and what's his guarantee at the end of 4 years? Nothing. And you know what he's going to do? Go to grad school. Yes, pay more, get more. God bless him, he's going to Yale, so good. He can play another hefty price tag, see what happens. I adore my cousin, but come on, really. So is it that big? No, it's not that big when you look at it from an education perspective. There's different programs that fit into this depending on how much time you need, how much coaching you need, what other levels you get in there. What else do you get? What are some of the topics that we teach? Deal or no deal? The critical numbers you must know. We go into those in more detail as we touch on them tonight. Ooh, which contracts to use? When to use them? What different kinds of contracts are there? Do you want to go sort all your contracts out yourself, or do you want to use our contracts written by local attorneys covered in all our local jurisdictions that we use and make sense? LLC setup basics. Should you rehab or wholesale? Yes, that's a decision sometimes. And that's not just based on the deal. That's based on you. That's based on your personal financial situation at the time. I've had students that are dead. That $65,000 wholesale check, 65188. Those guys wanted the rehab, go for the big bucks. So you guys are both broke. You're broke with a capital B. You're almost as broke as I was when I started. Wholesale it. Why would you look at the amount we can make? Oh, but we can make double or triple if we. Yes, you can, but with a lot more risk. It could take a lot more time. You guys are broke. And you take the 65 grand and run. It's a good thing. And so it convinced them, and it was right. Estimating renovation costs, running comps with or without MLX assets, building your dream team, the who, when, and how. And guess what? You think I already have a dream team in place for this local area? Yes. So guess who gets to meet them? You get to meet them. And then whose team are they now? They're your team, too. So it's great. Office setup for maximum results and ease. That's in the work style, lifestyle. We cover a lot of that. Marketing techniques, ooh, online and offline. Got to find the deals, right? Is that the scary part, finding the deals? Yeah, deals are out there. Deals are out there. That was what Neva doesn't say it in this video. If you go online, she's got another video, which we talked for like, 10, 15 minutes. All tip a lot of different information. One thing she said was, wow, it was the follow-up was critical. And she just wasn't sure that was the right thing, but she followed up, and the guy called her and said, you know why I'm calling you? Because I know you're for real, because I got a second postcard from you. I think of all those people that sent out one round and said, oops, that didn't work. Yeah, it didn't work because people, in the back of their mind, they're like, they're not so sure about you. You got the second one, he recognized her name and everything, and said, okay, maybe she's for real. I'll give her a ring, see what happens. When and how to conduct a home visit, ins and outs of working with settlement companies, financing your deals, building an effective buyer's list, controlling your deals, contract assignments, double closings, and other techniques. Do you need to really do a double closing? We'll talk about that. And deciphering a HUD-1 settlement statement. Yeah, there's some important things to look for when you're heading towards a deal. I love getting that HUD-1 in advance because there's certain things I want to make sure are on there and on there right. And guess what's one of the last things the settlement the company usually wants to do is give you that in advance because they're always running behind. So if you just want home study as option 2, you have home study that also has audio with it. It's 3 volumes. It's on the marketing machine, negotiating A to Z. Let's think how much fun we had with those 6. What if he had all 43? Powerful, right? Very powerful. And our quick cash wholesaling. That's a complete system to get you rolling with wholesaling. It's 1997. Now, how many people could imagine doing it? If you had this system, can you imagine doing these deals? If you're not absolutely satisfied, we give you a 7-day review period. You return that course, get your money back. Are there any bonuses for tonight only? Yes, we talked about good marketing. Of course, there's some bonuses for tonight. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to knock prices down. That's going to be the bonus if you take action tonight and tonight only. Otherwise, the prices are what the prices are on the website. If you're interested, you're going to talk to me. You're going to talk to Carolina at the back. For the complete coaching program, depending on which package you choose, they'll now range from $69.97 to $19.97. Get the application. We're going to do the application in a second. Home study discount, I'm going to cut that one in half. You can get the home study. You can get our 3 volumes and the audio that go with it. Which also includes the data disks with the forms and the contracts and all stuff for the local area. That's only going to be $9.97 tonight. So, interested in applying for the coaching program? Pull out a sheet of paper. Here's how we're going to do it. This is the application. On that sheet of paper, write your name, your cell phone number, and your email address. Be brief. You can be brief and succulent to the point. You know, concise. You don't have to write paragraphs, but tell me why. Why do you want my training? Why? What's it going to do for you? How's it going to change your life? be pithy and to the point on that. Same thing, state your previous experience. Do you have any previous real estate experience, or what do you do for a living? I want to know. We work really well with a lot of different personality types. We get a lot of engineers, a lot of military, a lot of government people. But I've also worked with flaky artists. It's been great. We deal with all personality types. The system works, but I want to know. We're the perfect fit for DC, for what we generally have in the crowd. Describe the future you want to have as point number four. Just briefly, why are you in this business? What does your future look like? Write that down. Describe what's not working for you today, because that's an important exercise, that one. Think about what isn't working. Heather, you said you tried things before. Didn't really come together. Yeah, so it wasn't working. And at a certain point, you had to admit that to yourself and say, this isn't working, what am I going to change? That's why that question's on there. Number six, state briefly what obstacles need to be overcome. Why am I asking you that? Some people haven't thought about that. You're not actually sure what your roadblock is. But if a coach pushed you to just ask that simple question, what's stopping you? What's holding you back? What the heck is the problem? You might have a small epiphany here tonight. And even if you didn't join our program, and even if you didn't succeed with us, that alone might unblock a lot of what's going on. You go, oh, wait a minute, that's what my problem is. All right, and then write down, if you're accepted, you'll pay depending what program you work out, the $997 tuition in full, or you'll arrange financing with me and Carolina. We will finance it for you. That's part of it. Talk to us, and then come meet me at the back table. I hope you all learned an enormous amount and enjoyed it. And see us at the back. You're welcome.